Today is Thursday. It's November 30th, 2017. It's 11:15 in the morning. I'm John Williams. This is the Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast recorded in the studios of WGN Radio. We hope you enjoy the podcast, and if you do, check out my radio show. It sounds a little bit like this, weekdays from 1 to 3.
I'm Steve Bertrand, host of the Business Lunch on WGN, noon to 1 every day.
I'm Patty Vasquez, and I host weeknights on WGN Radio from 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. And yes, there are people awake, or you can listen to the podcast.
I'm Eric Zorn, the increasingly dismayed columnist from the Tribune. I'm on Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays.
You know what? You're so right.
I was increasingly dismayed.
Well, I don't want to.
Go ahead, Steve.
I was driving in today just listening to things. And, you know, sometimes politics, if it's your someone with whom you don't agree, there's some sport in it, there's some engagement, fun, and it's over. It's just, it is dismaying. I'm dismayed.
You can have the adjective next week.
No, I'll think of something else. You hit me.
Well, I think a lot of people were shocked. I got emails from around the country from friends and colleagues this week, and some of them were just no, or text, you know. And I knew what they were talking about. At first, it was Pocahontas, which actually made me sad. The Pocahontas comment from the president didn't make me angry. I know that crap from him is predictable, but that one actually made me sad.
I thought the portrait, doing the ceremony in front of the portrait of President Andrew Jackson, was, you know, when his nickname was Indian Killer, that's sort of an odd
optics, schmoptics. Mm-hmm. And then, but I think a lot of us past Pocahontas were just literally dismayed. Is that what you were increasingly this week?
I'm increasingly dismayed about just about everything going on. I feel like Trump's been out of control these last few days with his tweets. To the point that you really have to start. I mean, I'm not one to jump in and play amateur psychologist, psychiatrist, but he seems unhinged.
You're thinking
really
about the videos.
I was thinking of it this morning, seriously, because when you are politically active in your mind, right, it's sometimes it is a bit of a game. You want to say, oh, look what the other side did. Can you believe how dumb they are? Or, you know, this is a crazy thing. But that's gone now. There is no joy in seeing some of the things that are being done there because it's not funny.
I have to say, I'm really disturbed by the speech the president gave last night in Missouri, where he was talking about the tax plan. And he was talking all about how his accountants are really mad at him because he's not going to benefit from it. He's going to suffer. All of his rich friends are mad at him. That's a complete lie. It is a complete, provable, utter, brazen lie. And we can call him on it all we want. A third of the country is not going to believe the truth. And you know, and I don't know where does that put us if people just aren't willing to look at this plan and say, no, this is a huge benefit for Donald Trump, huge benefit for wealthy
people.
Although
what's the point of that, Eric? I mean, that's, you know,
the point of it is that he's selling it as a middle class tax cut, and it's not.
Okay, but he's telling people, saying, I'm going to lose money on this.
That's, I think.
And what's the point of bringing yourself up at all?
Actually think this is, you know, frequently on my show, I'll say, okay, does this matter or not? The Pocahontas thing actually didn't matter. It was outrageous. But in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't change anybody's lives. The tax plan does. But Donald Trump's, but how it affects the president is really irrelevant. That's an argument. That's a thing we can all, you know, talk a lot about, but it's not that relevant.
But it is, John, but it's the point of when he's standing in front of a crowd and he's saying, my accountants told me that I'm going to lose money on this. You know, and the crowd cheers him. It's just not true.
It's like a car salesman saying, I'm going to lose money on this deal.
I know
it's
that.
Manipulative.
But he could say anything, and those people will cheer.
But
more
this
relevant
is what he's
is,
saying. He could say anything. He could say, this is going to be good for you. I believe this is going to spur the economy. I believe this is going to bring foreign investment back. But what he's saying is absolutely clearly, and as Eric said, provably a lie.
Well, you spent some time on that. And by the way, let's just welcome Patty Vasquez. I wasn't going to start with the president, but we're there, and let's just stay there for a minute. But Patty, welcome to our little podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Jump in as you feel fit.
I'm doing it. I got my elbows up.
You're sitting next to Zorn, so
ready
to rumble. But Eric, you actually spent some time this week. You wrote a piece where you went back to the president's tax plan, and you said a lot of people were calling you out for not being smart enough about economics. You're not an economist. Who the heck are you? So then you cited a University of Chicago survey of economists. And what did you discover?
Well, they surveyed, they have this panel of experts. It's roughly 40 academics. And they're from all across the political spectrum, all across the country. And they survey them periodically about major issues like this.
Conservatives and liberal
economists.
And
they ask them, oh, do you think that this is going to increase the debt in the next 10 years? And all of them said yes. And then they asked, is it going to spur GDP, gross domestic product? And most of them said no. And I think only one or two said yes. I can't remember the numbers. But basically, you know, the economists, learned economists from across the spectrum think this is a bad idea. Bloomberg did a similar survey of different economists, found the same thing. You look at the Congressional Budget Office, which is a nonpartisan arm of the government, and they analyzed this tax plan. And they said that basically, if you earn less than $75,000 a year now, you're going to be in the class of people that in 2027, you're going to see your taxes go up. That this is a boon for people who earn a lot of money. It is a bad deal. And the lower your income, if you're down to $30,000, it's going to affect you immediately in a bad way. That this is not a tax cut or tax plan that's aimed at lower working class people, middle income people. It is aimed at the investing class. That it's aimed at super wealthy people who aren't going to pay inheritance taxes, all these things. I mean, the thing is that and that's bad. And we can argue about it, but we don't have time to argue about it because they're pushing this through in an incredibly fast way. This thing was only introduced in early November in the House, I think, and now it's about ready to be voted on in the Senate. It took them like a year and a half in 1986 to do Reagan's bipartisan tax reform plan. This is not bipartisan. This is only Republicans are supporting this thing, and they're doing it so quickly that they're not even going to have a full CBO score.
But can you argue that it's completely insincere, or is there some sincerity? I mean, some of the people voting for this, supporting it, writing it, think it is the right thing to do.
Why are Republicans voting for it?
There is an article of faith among a lot of people who are in the Republican camp that the benefits to business, if you give a business a lot of money, that it's going to trickle down to the workers, right? This is the famous trickle-down theory. They asked a bunch of CEOs recently, said, okay, so what are you going to do with this money?
With Gary Cohn in the room.
Right. Gary Cohn in the room.
They asked him to raise their hand.
Yeah, you can raise your hand if you're going to reinvest in your business. And we're not going to do that. We're going to do some stock buybacks. We're going to do, that's not what they're going to do with that money. Because right now, business climate is really good right now. The Dow just went over 24,000 this morning for the first time ever. Business is booming. Business doesn't need this massive tax.
Right. How much better can it get if we're heading towards these numbers?
Doing a business show, I keep having these experts come in. I'm no expert at all. And they keep saying, once the economy picks up and the job market tightens, then you're going to see wages go up because businesses are going to have to do that. Well, they haven't done it. The
job market is already pretty tight. What, 4% unemployment?
Yeah, but wages aren't right.
Wages
right,
haven't followed. Businesses are going to pay their workers. They're not going to pay their workers unless they have to pay the workers. Workers can't strike anymore, so they can't force them to do it that way. So we're going to get stock buybacks where CEOs are going to get great bonuses because the stock price has improved under their tenure.
Well, then maybe the president's agenda of putting out crazy stuff is actually more calculated than I thought. Because I always say that he doesn't think anything through. But some of his tweets this week have distracted us from discussions like this.
Well, and how many people want to even talk about taxes? It's sort of this vague, we have this vague idea
right.
of how much we even pay. We
right.
know that when we fill out the forms, it's all impossible to even figure out. And what do I owe? And you sign it and wonder, is this the year I go to jail? I have no idea.
Really? I haven't seen your forms, but I don't right. have that
well,
thought.
You rich radio people, so you, yes. you're in a whole different
I've been
situation.
Self-employed for 23 years before I started working here, so you have all those deductions. Which I've heard there, that goes back and forth on how they're addressing
yeah.
people who are self-employed, deductions.
Goodbye.
Yeah. I mean, you worry about, do I claim my office space in my home because I pay,
Well, I think you're supposed
and then
to
there are others who are just getting away with murder, right?
Right.
I do the same thing as independent filer that, it's like, I think I can claim this.
Yeah.
And then you're afraid of it. And then, your neighbor's paying nothing. Exxon's paying nothing. What the hell? Exxon's paying nothing.
Right. I mean, if I'm making nothing, why can't I claim nothing compared to what they're making?
Okay. So this week, the president retweeted three videos, which he says show Muslims committing violent acts on others. And one that actually shows a person smashing a statue of the Virgin Mary. It's not clear that the videos are authentic. They look real. There's also some reporting this week that at least one of the men shown in one of the videos is from the Netherlands and is not Muslim at all. But the White House press secretary, Sarah Sanders, who should ask this week for both a raise and forgiveness from her God, said the truth of the videos is irrelevant as the president was just starting a dialogue about terrorism, immigration, and safety, which is the best you can do with that. You think he's actually doing this on purpose, Eric? Is this calculated to distract from the failings of his tax plan, or is this the rantings of a madman?
I'll go with the latter, John.
B.
I'll go with answer B. No, I don't see there being any method to this. I think he saw these tweets. Ann Coulter tweeted them out. Right. And he just retweeted them. I don't think he looked into the organization that originally sent those tweets out. I don't think he cared about the authenticity of it. And Sarah Sanders said later that it doesn't matter if the videos are true, that the problem is true. Yeah. And I want to try that excuse on my editor sometime. I'm not saying these facts aren't. What I'm saying is true, but my point is true.
Wasn't it George Bush? No, it was Saturday Night Live. It gave to George Bush the word truthiness.
Oh, no. That's Colbert's truthiness.
Was that Colbert?
Strategery is Saturday Night Live.
Well, maybe there's a little bit. I mean, so that's, and really, if you're Sarah Sanders, that's all you got. That's all you got.
And it's all about manipulating emotions. It's not about truth anymore. It's about who says a thing that makes people either feel good or feel angry. And in order to get those retweets and all the likes that he gets, he wants to see more of that from his supporters. It makes him feel good.
And this is where my dismay comes in, because he took video from a fascist or, at best case, a far right wing nationalist organization in Britain, a woman who's been convicted of a religious crime there, and retweeted them and gave it the full moral authority, not of the presidency, but of this country, of me and of you and of you, right? He's tweeting for us in a way, and this goes around the world. This woman then retweets it and says, God bless America. Oh. Theresa May spoke about it in Jordan today, saying that we have a special relationship with the U.S., but this was wrong and he shouldn't have done it. This is dismaying because there's no arguable reason to. What is she saying that there is, that this points out the truth of the problem? What's the problem? Mm-hmm. That our statues are being broken? That was a front yard Virgin Mary statue. Right? 12-year-olds break those statues. Is that what the problem is that she's exposing? I mean, this just shows he either doesn't understand his job, or he's just not capable of fulfilling it. I mean, I really believe that in this case, this was unprovoked. This was so poorly thought out that it's just dismaying.
So frustrating, too, that you don't hear and you don't feel like there's anything you can do about it.
Mm-mm.
We don't have any corrective action at our disposal.
And the people who support him, it doesn't matter. It absolutely does not matter, because he's doing all the other things that they want.
But I'm not even talking about the 35% or whatever it is, mm-hmm. right, Patty? I'm thinking, okay, so those people are going to be there for them. You know, the corrective action, I suppose, is let's all survive 3 more years, or let's impeach the guy, or let's have Congress find him insane and throw him out.
Invoke the 25th Amendment.
But that won't happen. The only, the only logical thing is that he gets impeached. But for what?
And by whom? Because it's
right. I mean, I think that's, you want to be dismayed, Eric? Where are the Paul Ryans? You know who I was mad at this week was General Kelly. Where's General Kelly?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It's dude, you were the one that was going to run a little order into this thing.
Here's what you should learn from the whole sex thing, the Matt Lauer and all this stuff. We create people in our mind and what we think they are. We don't know that John Kelly doesn't agree with all of it. What has John Kelly, other than our impressions or wishes for him, what has he done to show us that he's not with them lock, stock, and barrel?
Well, when he gave that interview and said that, the Civil War could have been avoided, it was because
he
holds a news conference and says, I'm only taking questions from people who know Gold Star families. What's that about? I mean, he really hasn't indicated to us that he's anything other than in lockstep with Donald Trump.
Well, and where's John McCain? And where's Corker? And where's some of these senators who are not running again? Why aren't they standing up to him, standing up to Trump, and making him pay some consequences for his bullying, it's like he's not going to learn if he doesn't get schooled by some of these people, and the only people in a position to do that are people like
and
McCain.
It's beyond,
and McCain, he's a big, war hero, God bless him for that, but, and he was a hero, I thought, in the health care, when he voted down the health care.
Yeah.
But if he goes along with this, this tax plan that's being rushed through, he loses all his cred in my book.
And is that what it is? Is it that they want, that they continue to, keep quiet because they want the tax bill and they want court appointments?
Right, I know that. So the end justifies the means. I mean, they'll hold their nose. But Eric, if they vote for the tax bill, I don't think that impugns their integrity or their intelligence. I think it's just the longstanding difference between Republicans and Democrats. Your reporting notwithstanding, I don't think they're all corrupt or insane. Mm. But when they don't in unison renounce the president's 3 tweets this week about the 3 videos, That, to me, is the thing that's most alarming. That's the thing that's most telling. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, Ezra Klein wrote a piece in Vox, and he's making the argument that it's time to impeach him. It's time.
Which time, though? It seems like it keeps happening.
I'm sorry, Steve, I don't mean to laugh.
No,
there's no hope for
I'm
that.
Sitting over here, and I'm dismayed, and now you're laughing at me. That doesn't help.
Okay, go ahead. Enjoy it.
I can't believe you're not angry. I mean, dismayed seems so moderate.
He said that...
Dismayed is you got your tail between your legs.
Yeah.
You know, that you're just like, you're beat down. You don't have any chance.
I'll do that next week. That'll be my adjective for next week.
Right?
I open my eyes and I look at the news and I start screaming no when I wake up.
I'm not mad.
What?
I'm not mad anymore. I'm not mad because it doesn't help and it's not going to change. It doesn't make me angry anymore because it's defeating. I'm defeated.
No.
You know, I mean.
Keep showing up, Steve.
It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing.
Congressman Luis Gutierrez, the well-known Democrat from Chicago, said this week, the day after filing his candidacy papers, he doesn't want to run for re-election for his own seat. Is there more to this story than his wanting to advocate for Hispanics or have some national platform or help the people in Puerto Rico? Eric, what do you think is up here? Why did he bow out all of a sudden?
That's a good question. Mark Brown of the Sun-Times is the first one to float the idea that he's going to run for president.
Yeah.
And it would probably be more of a Dennis Kucinich, Jesse Jackson Jr. symbolic candidacy, which would be used to draw attention to the immigration issue, which is very dear to him. I don't think he really thinks that the country is ready to elect Luis Gutierrez.
The pipsqueak. Remember that?
The pipsqueak. I thought it was very cynically timed. Obviously he did it on Monday, the day that petitions were due, so that to give, and pretty obviously Chuy Garcia got a heads up on this, so he had his petition drive ready to go. I think there's some other petition drives they've got until Monday to file for that seat. I can't read the tea. I don't know what else is in his mind. I guess he thinks that running as a non-incumbent for president is a better way to do it than running as an incumbent congressman. I don't get it otherwise.
And there's also the possibility that the tragic occurrences, what's going on in Puerto Rico. You know, I'd like to take sort of the human sort of point of view on this and go, he's moved by that, wants and does want to elevate it, and obviously there were things going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, but what's the better platform for him, Patty? I mean, maybe being a member of Congress has more authority than, what's he going to do, join Habitat for Humanity? I mean, he would be more effective in helping the people in Puerto Rico as a voting member of Congress.
Does he? Because they don't have much strength in Congress right now as far as the Democratic bloc.
Well,
did you see the excise tax from products coming out of Puerto Rico in this tax bill is like 20%? And that's just coming. That would be like saying you're going to tax products from Texas coming to Illinois. They're part of the country. So, I mean, he's not able to stop something like that.
Did you think, what was your first thought, though, when you heard like that? Did your mind go where mine went just for a second? You go, oh, I wonder if he's going to join the club of people who are...
Oh, men behaving badly club?
Men behaving badly club. But, well, I have no reason to believe that except,
Well, you do a little bit because it was unexpected, it was sudden, and he'd filed the paper. I mean, there were a lot of reasons.
It's like, why would you suddenly jump out of the way except maybe there's something coming? But that hasn't happened. We don't know of that.
Well, the timing having to do with the petition deadlines is really what was so telling. You had to get out of the way early enough to let Garcia get his petitions in, but hopefully late enough that or anyone else who wants to run.
Well, the dude can do whatever he wants. I mean, I don't know that we need to necessarily know that much about his motivations or care. We'll find out in time. But I just keep thinking that there's more to this story than we know, and I don't know what that is yet.
I'm really interested in the effect it might have on the mayoral race in 2019, because Garcia was poised to run again, and he had a block of progressive voters who were behind him. And I think that was going to dilute because the vote is going to be all in the primary, right, as usually is going to be the case. And if you can get the progressive vote fragmented, then Emanuel sails to victory in the primary.
So why is Gutierrez doing Rahm Emanuel that favor then?
Well, I don't know that he is doing him a favor.
Doesn't that take Garcia off the table then?
Carlos Rosa might be a stronger candidate than Chuy Garcia has been. I think he's younger. He's, you know, he's inspiring. I don't know that he's qualified or ready for it, but... There's something
he might be Troy La Riviere. How do you say his name?
I can't give it to you.
Principal. He's the head of the Principals Association. Very dynamic guy. Could possibly get that constituency. I mean, in some ways, it opens the door for someone to come in. And you know, I know a lot of progressives who voted for Garcia, but a lot of them were like, I'm not so sure he'd actually be a very good mayor. He was not very impressive in the debates when you asked him about his solutions. It was more like an anti-Rahm vote. That anti-Rahm vote is out there, but it wasn't necessarily a pro-Chewy vote. I don't see that this really hurts. Or as I say, I don't think it really helps Emmanuel that much.
I see what you're saying. Steve opened his mouth, drew in air. I'm going to continue.
Sorry, I was breathing.
Let me do this. Since we're going down this path for just a moment, two more guys have joined the Sexual Harassment Club, Matt Lauer of NBC and Garrison Keillor of NPR. Garrison, of course, has a syndicated column as well. Lauer's apologized and said that some of the stories about him were true. Keillor, not so much. Last week, I suggested that Al Franken is not in the same league as some of the most egregious sinners in this category, but now I'm starting to rethink that. As time goes on, I think his job or his reelection are much in jeopardy.
Nancy Pelosi came out today and said John Conyers should resign. Yeah. We've seen her sort of involvement on that. Conyers is hospitalized now, apparently in some sort of stress relief or related situation. Away from politics, Russell Simmons, the co-founder of Def Jam, resigned from his companies today after being accused in a column. So you think, what do you...
I'm amazed. I'm just amazed.
It's like, you know what it's like? I was telling my wife and I were talking last night, except there's real responsibility here, but it's like a Soviet purge. I mean, I studied the Soviet politics where you name someone and then they disappear.
Yeah.
And
that's...
I'm sorry, I don't mean
to. No, but where neighbors were encouraged to turn in neighbors, and and no one knew who was safe, no one knew who was next. Now, there's a big difference there. Stalin was killing innocent people by and large, and from what we've seen, there's been no literally innocent man named here.
Yeah, but I think there's a range, and I am also just a little troubled by the speed with which all of this is taking place.
Well, I think it's also there is momentum to it, I guess. I mean, I guess from my point of view, and it's interesting because, you know, I think the hard part for us all to try to even imagine is what is the healing part of this for people, for women who have dealt with sexual harassment and assault for decades, and for men who are like, well, now I don't even know what's appropriate anymore. And the thing about some people who are angry, some men and women who feel that this is a witch hunt, I have issue with that, because it's not a witch hunt. It's women and men who are finally speaking up after telling you that they're telling you that they've been suffering in silence. And if your first reaction is, well, now I don't know what's appropriate anymore, well, maybe you didn't know what was appropriate before, and this is an opportunity to learn. And it's, it feels painful, and it's awful, and it's necessary, and it's a relief for many people.
Should a man, short of violent, short of assault, should a man be punished today for something he did 20 years ago, if it has to do with harassment? And the reason I ask, and I hadn't really thought of it until Patty, you started talking, but so what you're doing is you're punishing a person today for who he or she was 20 or 25 years ago.
And
the assumption is that it's indifferent, it has changed.
Right, and that thing that person did 20 years ago affects the victim's life. It has a permanent impact.
So the answer would be yes?
There's
no allowance for that offender to have recognized his wrongs and changed his ways and...
Well, and hopefully he has. I don't know how you measure that. How do you measure any of that?
I don't know.
20 years later, you can say, no, I haven't done that anymore. I'm not that guy anymore.
But it should be a case-by-case basis, too, Patty, because this is the thing that bothers me about it, Steve. And I don't know why I continue to press this point, maybe because I'm a 57-year-old white male in the media. But I just notice not only how quickly things are going, but how we're lumping everybody together.
Yes, it's hard to distinguish between what was inappropriate comments, what's inappropriate touching. I understand that, and that's the other thing that you have to go case by case.
Well, my brother calls me last night. I pick up the phone. He goes, "What's going on here?" And he was talking about Matt Lauer and Garrison Keillor. And he goes, "I mean, you've got to give me a... This is insane." And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Matt Lauer, I can't get my head around it. I've watched him for years. He's a good guy. He's my guy. He's all these things we thought Matt Lauer is." And I said, "Well, did you hear about the stuff about him giving sex toys and asking women to engage with them and that he showed his penis to a female coworker?" And he says, "No, I didn't hear that." "Okay, that's different." I think, you know, if anybody that's in that, like, I don't know, we need like a a scale, and these are the things, the little benchmarks, from an inappropriate hand on the back, like Garrison Keillor says at a selfie or a photo.
The weird thing is that he says her shirt was open and his hand went 6 inches up. There are details that he's sharing. You go, okay, what? How does your hand actually
all the way
go
to
up?
Rape and assault? And all these guys are in different places along that continuum. I don't know where Garrison Keillor is.
Right. I don't think Garrison Keillor knows where he is.
Well, his whole response to this was really strange. I mean, Matt Lauer issued this one of these kind of boilerplate apologies this morning. I mean, it was, but Keillor says, anyone who was ever around my show can tell you that I was the least physically affectionate person in the building. Actors hug, musicians hug, people were embracing every Saturday night, left and right. I stood off in the corner like a stone statue. If I had a dollar for every woman who asked to take a selfie with me and who slipped an arm around me and let it drift down below the belt line, I'd have at least $100.
But the paragraph that precedes that is where he said, it's a great honor to be fired broadcasting.
Yes. It's very
what
strange.
A stupid thing to say.
I like his response. Okay, I'm going to take his response by saying that that was his only offense and he didn't do it, and he doesn't see it as an offense. And if that's the case,
right.
How do we know he's not telling the truth?
Right.
And if that's what's in his head, I think that was a beautiful one. I think it was self-deprecating. If I had a buck every time, I'd have $100. That's self-deprecating.
But when a man says, and I know this is decades ago, 20 years ago, when he says that a world without sexual harassment, it would be a world without flirtation. I get that. I get where people got guys.
Wait, was that part of his statement?
That was what he said 20 years ago.
Oh, okay.
And that's, I mean, that's something that he was 20 years ago already thinking like, oh, the sexual harassment thing. We have to worry about this now. And that's what I hear. That's what a woman hears. Like, we don't want to go to work and flirt. And if a woman flirts back, it's because
women do flirt back.
And sometimes it's because there's self-preservation, or it feels like that's what the environment is like and you have to play the game.
Or sometimes they know it helps them.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, yeah, it's all
really,
it's
Steve,
all
you're
going to
go there.
Well, why the hell not? I mean, it's all part of it.
And they do know that
only
they have them because that's how the system is set up.
On them.
This is what
only
I'm saying.
Only because guys are receptive to those overtures. Mm-hmm. I mean, don't look at me that way. I think that
no, it's absolutely true. That's the way the system is set up in some places.
I'm afraid you're accusing me of something here, and I don't mean to. I'm just saying that there are players everywhere. I'm not diminishing. See, this is why no one. This is why you can't honestly express yourself.
I know. I just did to you what I'm very defensive about myself.
I think Steve's absolutely right. Women play the game because and they flirt back because it might help them. Look, if you have a boss that tells you, "Hey, did you see so and so? Isn't she hot?" and that's your dude boss telling you that, and you're like, "Then what do I do to make sure that my job is safe? And am I as hot? And how do I dress when I come into work? I didn't like the way he was talking about my body."
Well, I think if a boss said that, that's bad. I mean, that's over the line. You know.
I'm just saying.
Okay, one more thing. We'll come back to this next week, I'm sure.
I don't want to.
Mayor Rahm Emanuel wants private companies to pitch for a high-speed direct line from O'Hare to downtown and vice versa. No public funds, he said, would be at stake, and the request is for a plan that gets passengers to or from the airport in 20 minutes or less with service every 15 minutes. They're saying $25 to $35 a trip. Eric, you all in?
I think if they want to go ahead and get Elon Musk is the latest guy who says he's going to use his boring company.
What? He's not boring. I go, no, I think he means like drilling boring.
Drilling company. He wants to drill a big tube, right? A tunnel.
Yeah. That's where I am, right below the blue line.
And I'm saying go for it. If you're not going to spend taxpayer money, you think this is a good investment or you want to prove something, it would be a fabulous thing to have. I don't know how often I would take it if I weren't on expense account.
Oh, well. It's not worth $20 to you, $25 to be guaranteed on a snowy day a 20-minute trip to the airport?
Actually, you'd have to get to O'Hare. You'd have to park at O'Hare. You'd have to – so I mean,
or go downtown and then take – it's not going to go to your neighborhood, but I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm downtown every day. The idea that I could get from downtown to O'Hare – for a business traveler to get from downtown to O'Hare, vice versa, guaranteed 20 minutes?
Yeah.
Whew.
And what a great train
for
tourists,
$20,
too.
I would spend that.
Yeah, and especially if you could also check your luggage at the station down
and
at the terminal.
And Wi-Fi on the thing.
Is that part of it? Is checking
that
your bags?
That was one of the things they're talking
premium
about.
Premium service.
I mean, I say go for it. I mean, I think it's a bit of a fantasy. I don't think he's going to make money at it. I think the price may be higher than that.
Yeah.
But go for it. And maybe they can extend it up Michigan Avenue because there are a lot of hotels up here. Maybe out to McCormick Place.
Have a couple branches.
Construction.
Here's the thing that would happen. Yeah, I know. A, it would screw our lives for a decade.
Oh, my God.
and B, it would end up costing the government money. You know, you can see this happening, right? But then they're going to be in trouble, and so then somehow the city or state are going to have to help prop it up. You know, I don't believe that it can be done privately.
Yeah, I like the audacity of the dream. I like the idea that people are thinking big. I think it's in the spirit of Chicago to do something like that. So it's okay. It's okay with me that they're
little plans.
Exactly.
Let's go.
What if it works and it's this incredibly cool thing and people say you got to go to Chicago. You get vacuumed out to the airport.
Instead, we're a city of like, well, we didn't want the Olympics because we were afraid that might be wrong. We didn't want this. Or we didn't want that. Let's do something. Let's go for it.
Yeah, I'm with you Steve. But don't start the Olympic argument with me again.
Should have had the Olympics.
I think the Olympics. You wanted the Olympics? Yeah. Eric, if you were king, would you have had the Olympics come?
Not in retrospect, no.
I was not.
I didn't want them in retrospect. I wanted them in Chicago.
Here's our recommendations of the week. This is something, I don't know if we told you we do this, Patty, something you are reading, watching, listening to, or consuming that you want to suggest for our listeners. Steve, you usually go first.
Yeah, I never have anything very good, so I'm just going to read what I'm just seeing from the Associated Press.
Okay.
I apologize for that.
That could be a recommendation.
The wire service. What a recommendation.
Jim Nabors has died.
What?
Golly.
Oh.
At 83.
Hell, golly.
So go home and watch a Gomer Pyle episode.
Or an old Andy Griffith.
I was always surprised what a great singer he was.
Yeah, I don't think he was. Wrong day to say that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was too soon.
Back home in Indiana. Wonderful.
Speaking ill of the dead, John Williams.
It was all good. It was
WGN.
All good. No, it was all good. How about you, Patty? What are you recommending?
I am watching The Fall on Netflix. I have a relationship with Dannenberger Family Vineyards, and she's pairing wines with shows that you're binge watching. So we assign
what a good idea.
Thank you. Binge and Uncork, or Uncork and Binge. We haven't decided yet which way that goes. But
so you pick any kind of series and say this is a beverage that would go well with it?
She picks the wine that goes with it. We assign her a show, and then she comes back. Like, she's doing Ozark this week, so her next assignment will be The Fall, which stars Gillian Anderson. She played Scully on The X-Files.
Yeah, that was a good series.
And The Fall, if you like Gillian Anderson, once you get past the fact that she has an Irish accent, it's a great, it's hard. It's a serial killer show, but
yeah. So, what's the wine that goes with the Ozarks?
She'll tell us on Friday night.
Some rot tomorrow gut.
That's what I'm thinking. It can't cost more than $3.50.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, props to the Tribune because in the food section on Wednesday of this week, they did the wines at Target.
Oh yeah.
You know, I forget the label, but they have a couple. But I think one is their brand. And there was like, you know, they did the Pinot, the Chardonnay. They did all five of the principal wines they sell there under that one label. And all of them $10 or less. And
nice.
It was a favorable review. They said, if you only want to spend $10, these ain't bad.
There you go. And Dannenberger's, they grow their grapes right here in Illinois.
How about that?
Illinois wine.
They step on them with the bare feet of Illinois residents.
In every glass.
All right. One thing I'm recommending is Songs of Good Cheer, which we're starting next Wednesday. Mary Schmeek and I at the Old Town School of Folk Music, we do these holiday sing-alongs. John, you've been to many of them.
I just bought my ticket this week.
Oh, you did? Great. Great to see you there. Really good time. We have an all-star band, and oldtownschool.org is where to go to get tickets to that. Wednesday. I think everything is sold out, but Wednesday night.
That's the night that we're going. That was the only night we could get tickets
for. There you go. That's why. The thing I've been listening to lately, I just started listening to, is a podcast called Slow Burn. It's Slate has done this series of podcasts about the Watergate scandal. And you think, well, why now? Why are they doing it now? Well, you know why. You know why they're doing it now. And they're sort of getting deep into the weeds on Watergate trivia, the Watergate story that, you know, you think, you know, you remember all the president's men, but they're really going deep into it. And it's fascinating because Watergate is once again quite fascinating. So that's called Slow Burn.
Excellent.
That was going to be my recommendation.
Griffin, really?
My son was telling me about it last night. And I said, well, is there an anniversary or something coming up? And he said, no. In the first episode, they go, there's no major anniversary. We just think this is an interesting subject. And rather than be the comprehensive Watergate story, it's anecdotes and stories about Watergate that maybe you didn't know. For instance, Martha Mitchell. So there she is, knowing a little more than the administration was comfortable with. And they're like, what are we going to do with her? Because she might start to talk. So they put her in a hotel. And they don't let her out for a few days. Essentially, they quarantine her against her will. The marriage collapsed thereafter.
And when David Frost interviewed Nixon several years later, he blamed Martha Mitchell, who was the wife of Attorney General John Mitchell, and a, you know, sort of a blousy drunk, right?
Yeah, right.
The first episode is all about Martha Mitchell, and it's I'm really excited about the show. And I'm keen to learn about it. Just like I was with the Vietnam War series. I'm learning a lot of stuff that I
Did you finish the Vietnam series?
I'm not done with it yet, but I'm going at it very steadily.
I didn't finish it. I don't know if I've got one episode left or two. Did you watch the Vietnam series?
I didn't have a chance. I have it all on DVR.
Yeah, I know. We'll all have to watch it, but it's work. You know,
yeah.
I don't. It's not as I don't know what the word is. Maybe watchable as I thought. I don't know what I anticipated.
No, it isn't necessarily pleasant. Johanna and I sit down every just about every week, at least once, maybe twice, and we watch about 45 minutes of it, which is about all you can take at some point.
Well, some of the episodes are an hour and a half long.
Right. Oh. So we watch it in little segments, and it can be very grim and sobering, but it's really important stuff. So.
It is, and it resonates in a way today about mm-hmm. trust a government, protest a government, stuff like that. And I found myself surprised how little gory combat scenes I saw, although you see a lot. I thought there'd be a lot more flesh and blood. What surprised me was just how angry I got at government, how Nixon and Johnson and these guys were making decisions that they knew were not in the best interest of those young men and maybe even the country. And that stuff just made me crazy.
I was fortunate enough to be at the San Diego Marine Corps Recruit Depot, and we had a tour of their museum, and it was interesting how our tour guide, he's a Marine, and he really went after the government
when
he was talking about it. Yeah, I was surprised
to hear that. Yeah. That's this week's podcast.
Before we go, can I plug an appearance too?
Go.
I'm going to be for New Year's Eve. We are doing a show at the Filament Theater in Portage Park. We are doing a family friendly show at 7:30 p.m. so you can bring the kids and celebrate New Year's with Argentina at 9 p.m. We'll do a live broadcast with whatever their celebration is. And then an adult show at 10 p.m. till midnight.
How do I get tickets to that?
Eventbrite and search for New Year's Eve with Patty Vasquez.
Thanks, Patty. Eric, nice to see you. Steve Bertrand. Usually we're joined by Scott Stannis and Kristen McQuarrie. They'll join us another day. Ben Cortez is our engineer again. Thank you, Ben. And Aleph Garris is the producer of The Mincing Rascals. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to The Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNradio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus Podcast Network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.